Good morning, everybody. I hope you're having a fantastic Monday morning. This is episode 50, I believe, of the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces. Sorry, I didn't update my sheet, unfortunately. But today is the 28th, and we are at 69K Bitcoin. Let's go. I am Coleman. I will be your host today. And I want to say good morning to everybody listening. I see Allison, Wade, Jacob helping me in the morning, Doc, Moms in Bitcoin, Chef Sam, Chivas. Good morning. Good morning, everybody. Feel free if you want to go ahead and request to join the panel today. We're going to have a lot of discussions. A lot of things happened over the weekend. I'm going to touch on this. Want to welcome Mining Goblin to the stage. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. So we'll be talking about the TAP conference that happened over the week, and Mining Goblin will be giving us an update. But before we jump into that, I just want to give a quick update to Operation Gabriel. We will be doing a Bitcoin veteran video podcast tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Eastern time, going over everything we're doing and what we have done and kind of our future outlook for that space. Mining Goblin, you have a hot mic still. So we're going to give that. That'll be at 7 p.m. tomorrow night. And so we just want to make sure everybody's aware that it'll be live streamed on YouTube and here on X. So please make sure we get that out. And again, huge thank you to everybody who helped us with Operation Gabriel and is continuing to help us with that. We've raised over $115,000. And so those funds are being utilized to help everybody that is affected. We're still getting warm weather clothing. It's starting to get really cold out there in the mountains. Generators, fuel, and feed for all the livestock. So that's the biggest push right now. So if you know of any farmers that have extra feed, please reach out to us. We're looking for that. And if you're able to help out with clothing and cold weather gear, please let us know. I know that we have one of our BVs out there right now, Hunter. He's on boots on the ground, I believe, today, and he's going to be helping. So I look forward to when he gets back to getting an update from him. Some other big news. We have the Bitcoin Alaska website is up and tickets are ready to go. So once Wade gets all settled in this morning, he'll be joining us to give us an update on that. But let's go ahead and start kicking it off with Mining Goblin with the recap from the TAB conference.
Yeah, so for anybody not familiar, it's not the TAB conference, it's just TABConf, right? The Atlanta Bitcoin Conference. You can go to tabconf.com, TABCONF.com to check it out. But it's a technical Bitcoin conference, right? It's a protocol and application developers coming together, collaborating, debating, you know, the people that are writing the code that make this technological revolution possible are the people that are attending this conference, right? Very, very high signal, very, very big brain. You know, I was like the dumbest person in every single room, which is always a good thing, right? So yeah, that's it. It happened down in Atlanta. If you haven't been to Atlanta, there is a Bitcoin space in Atlanta, very similar to, you know, Bitcoin Park in Nashville. You got the Bitcoin Commons and Pleb Lab in Austin. And then there's BitLabs in Atlanta. So a lot of good development work going on there. There's fun like hackathons, there's fun chess tournaments, right? Like, because it's a bunch of nerds. So of course we're playing chess. Presentations on a number of different things. The entire conference was run open source. So everything, if you go in there, if you the schedule tab will take you to GitHub, right, where all the code's being developed. And then the schedule itself was published and managed on GitHub. So very, very developer focused, very, very technical, and just kind of wanted to give a shout out to it and a little update, maybe answer some questions on some of the topics.
Yeah. What was the biggest takeaway that you had during the, I think it was for 4 days, correct? Mining Goblin?
Yeah, 4 days. So the first 2 days were just kind of workshops, like sit down, they had a bunch of tables out with monitors and stuff. And then they had breakout rooms for specific, you know, workshops and everything like that. So it was all hands-on, you know, let's type this in, let's build this code, let's figure out how this works. And the biggest takeaway for me, and then the second day was more of your traditional conference with like panels and speakers. You know, I was on a mining decentralization panel talking about the current state of Bitcoin mining and centralization. And the whole thing, all the panels were Socratic panels. So if you haven't been to a BitDevs before, I highly recommend you go seek out a BitDevs, even if you have to drive a little ways to get there. And a BitDevs runs it as a Socratic seminar, right? And what that means is just an engaging, you know, Q&A style open forum with some very specific rules, right? They use these rules called Jadenhaus rules, where basically you can talk about what was talked about there, but you cannot attribute who said such a thing, right? So the things that are brought up at BitDevs, the way that they run that allows for, you know, open forum discussion where people don't necessarily have to be reserved, right? And obviously, you know, everybody, there's no phones, there's no pictures or anything like that. And then it's a Q&A, it's a discussion and a debate. So if you don't have a BitDevs in your local area, maybe you can start one. You don't have to be super technical, right? Bitcoin OpTech is a great thing to follow for like updates and stuff like that. But just kind of digesting and reading over that was a thing. So let's see, there was a panel on, first they announced a new company that is hiring Bitcoin Core devs, right? So that was like one of my huge takeaways. So there's a company that just got started out in San Fran, and their mission is funding, and they have two core devs that are going to be working for them, right? And then with enough runway to hire more core devs or more contributors to the Bitcoin ecosystem. But the cool thing about TabConf is it's not just like core devs, right? So I don't work on core. And a number of the other people don't work on core. You had Lightning developers there. You had eCash developers. You had, you know, mining developers. You had these big brain cryptographers that are doing new multi-signature, you know, protocols and cryptography and zero knowledge proof stuff. So it's the biggest thing I took away was this space is so alive from a technical standpoint, but it's still, you know, we still need way more developers, right? There's so much surface area. There's a lot of discussion around, oh yeah, like this idea, but you know, never enough time, right? But such is the case continuously.
Mining Goblin, I got a quick question for you for people that might not be familiar. Why is it so important to have people working on the core of the code?
Yeah, it's important because any software, you know, as software goes on, not just bugs, right? Like bugs are easy. Hand wavy thing to talk about why it's important to have people working on core. But in general, software has sort of, we'll call it gardening that's required, right? You kind of have to keep it manicured. For instance, one of the recent changes was the way that Bitcoin Core is built, right? So the actual system that does the building and the compiling of the code. So there's like some optimizations and some changes that made it better, I guess, without going too technical. And so those types of things are always needed and encouraged, right? So another example is this guy started out and he sped up initial block download time by like 25%. And I can't speak to the specifics of it, but like just that alone, right? Like when you go start bootstrapping a core node and you go download the initial blockchain, right? That 25%, that's a huge savings. That's a huge savings, right? When you're talking about engineering, double-digit percentages are pretty large percentages, right? Even a 1% improvement is good when you think about all the people who are going to be downloading nodes from now into the future, right? You're saving so much time. You're optimizing so much.
How do we fund the core developers? The new company you said that's coming out of San Francisco, is it private or is it all publicly funded?
This one, I'm not sure exactly their funding. It's called Localhost Research. So I think that might be Googleable. Maybe not. It's not optimized in the Google yet. And I think that's more of a private funding. You know, they're hiring people, you know, like benefits and all that kind of jazz. But there are a ton of different ways to look into funding core devs. So OpenSats, like I will always shill OpenSats. I'm a recipient of OpenSats in the past, but they are funding not just core devs, but just devs in general in the ecosystem for both Bitcoin and for Nostr. You've got Brink, you've got not donation-based, but like Chain Code Labs. There's tons of ways of doing it, but the biggest one would probably be looking for your nonprofits like OpenSats and similar that are funding, you know, developers to do the work without a corporate overlord.
Yes, and so just to make sure everyone's familiar or aware, you don't want to have a big corporation like funding the core developers, because then they'd be able to sway different aspects of the code and make Bitcoin kind of go to one way. correct me if I'm wrong with that, Mining Goblin.
You do and you don't, right? You need a healthy dose of both. Core development is a very academic, very time intensive, changes take years to roll out, not days or months. It's years. And so providing runway, a lot of core devs, like, you know, personal friend of mine is core dev, is, you know, works for a corporation with your standard, you know, salary and benefits and all that kind of stuff. So it's a healthy mix of both, but, you know, my thesis has always been, you know, Bitcoin is going to unlock time for the nerds and the other productive classes of society to build the tools that we need. And, you know, near and dear to my heart is the technology. So building those tools, I think, is of critical importance, because technology is what frees us, right? Like, it's captured us in some ways. You know, we have these silos and these algorithms and shitty money that are all derivatives of technology. But the people that are building and running, more importantly, the better future, right? Like, the code that you're running when you're running Bitcoin Core node, like, some dude or some chick had to write that, right? Like, that was a labor of love for somebody, or maybe it was somebody's full-time job. But the more we can iterate and experiment with these things, the better, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Was there any other big takeaways from TAB?
Let's see. I don't know about other huge takeaways. I think that funding was probably the biggest thing, and really just the health of the community, right? Like, there's just so many smart people all getting together, and you know, whatever you think of certain sects of Bitcoin, right? Like, there's different groups of Bitcoiners, and some of them dislike each other for ideological reasons or whatever. But everybody there, it was all, you know, amicable. Right? Like, everybody has at least a certain level of respect for each other there, because we're there to not attack individuals. We're there to attack ideas. We're there to attack protocols, right? And that was actually one of the things that's a good one, is we ran this thing called Warnet, which is like a Bitcoin hacker sort of simulation with a bunch of vulnerable Bitcoin nodes, right? So over the course of Bitcoin Core's life, there have been vulnerabilities. And so they had a bunch of these spun up, and there were teams of people at different tables all trying to take down the node, right? So you knew what version the node potentially was on. And so you got to attack it with some, you know, some CVE, which is a way of documenting sort of exploits and stuff like that. So that was a pretty cool thing to experience and watch. I myself didn't get to take down a Bitcoin node, but it was still a good one.
Was anybody successful in taking it down?
Oh yeah. I mean, it's when you have well-documented CVEs or hacks, I wouldn't say it's trivial, but sometimes it's very trivial to sort of write code for that, like write a quick little script that does it. A lot of times you'll see the software has, you know, unit tests or like tests, right? There's a bunch of like software tests that software goes through in its development cycle. And so a lot of times you'll see tests that are designed to make sure that that bug doesn't happen anymore. So you can kind of go into those tests and grab out that code and you know, carve out the pieces that you need to replicate the exploit, if that makes sense.
It does. It's a little bit over my head, but I think I'm able to.
Yeah, no worries. It's like if you knew there, you know, you have a like a hole in a pipe, right? And you're like a plumber. You know, and it's like this specific kind of hole. It's like, you know how to fix it because it's well documented, like the construction, like, you know what you need to do to fix it. And somebody else has a reference for how you can fix it. Right. So it's like, it's a template to be used.
Okay.
That's a bad analogy.
No, I'm tracking with that.
The other cool thing was, so we actually got BNBV, Shane Hazel was up on stage, and talking about Meshtastic in Operation Gabriel, and that had a huge reception. Like, a bunch of people came to the room specifically for that talk. They had build your own Meshtastic devices there, and then, you know, just hearing about how Bitcoin in combination with other open source freedom tech was enabling the literal saving of lives was, you know, very, very enlightening. Like, a bunch of people came up to him afterwards and myself and was like, wow, that was like, I had no idea. Thank you for sharing that with me. Like, that was amazing. And then you could go and sit down at the table right there and build yourself a Meshtastic device. So we had, you know, one of the after party things, there was some guy on the rooftop and he had like this big antenna and was hitting back to the hotel where everybody was staying, like 2 miles away. So we're getting like 2 miles of comms distance on these mesh chassis devices from a Rift Out bar to like a Hampton Inn, which was pretty cool in like an urban environment.
And just really quick for people who are unaware, can you explain what mesh tactic devices are and how they kind of work?
Yeah, mesh tactics are just like little computer boards with radios on them, and they mesh together, right? So the concept of a mesh is like every single node talks to each other in some way, shape, or form. And what that means, at least from like wireless communication, is you don't have to talk directly. Like if I want to talk to you, Coleman, I don't have to talk directly to your radio, to your node. If you're connected to Wade and then Wade's connected to the BV node, I can hop through Wade and BV. It's very similar to how like Lightning works and a lot of other like routing stuff works, is you don't necessarily have to talk to the person you want to talk to. Other people will relay it for you. And that was a kind of another thing that the mesh tactic I hope is normalizing in people's brains, is we all have these supercomputer devices with a super sophisticated radio array on it, right? It's called a cell phone. And you can Bluetooth, you know, you can drop your JPEGs and your memes to each other over Bluetooth using like AirDrop or whatever. But for whatever reason, when you want to call your buddy sitting next to you, it has to go up to some centralized tower somewhere and route through the internet or whatever, and then come back to him, right? But mesh tactics is a huge, clear demonstration that we have the technology. We don't need infrastructure necessarily. It's huge. It's great. Like let me retract that. We do need infrastructure, but our reliance on such infrastructure should not be as much as it is right now. And so that's what I'm hopeful for and excited for, to see maybe some iteration, some inspiration for kind of like breaking out of the chains of these centralized like wireless service carriers, right?
Absolutely. So do you envision some time in the future where there'll be cell phones linking to these devices?
Yeah, there's a pretty cool device that will just plug into like the USB-C port on your Android phone. And then with an app, you have a ham radio, right? So you can just plug in like a little chip, and they have a nice little case that it slides into and everything on the back of your phone. So I'm hopeful, right? But at the same time, you know, it's one of the many final bosses that we have in this war against fiat is closed source, proprietary, probably backdoored, you know, radio chips for cell phones.
That's awesome. Bit Petro, welcome to the stage. Did you have a question for Mining Goblin?
Actually, I'm curious to see if LoRaNet is still around, or actually, I think it's called, what was it? So it was a Venezuelan project that was using LoRa to basically broadcast Bitcoin transactions, and I believe they had a wallet built on it. LoChaNet is the name of the project. LoCha. And yeah, it's one that was, you know, way far back in the days of 2017, 2018 when it was being rolled out. And I think Adam Back did invest a little bit in with them. You know, a while back, there was a company that turned Shitcoiny, but before they did so, they had a piece of software that you could download on Android and Apple devices, and it would allow you to create a mesh from your existing hardware. It was a full mesh that would use Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. It was called OpenTree, and I believe OpenTree is no longer functional. You can still get the APKs for them and it'll work. But as a business, I believe they are defunct. They tried to go the shitcoin route right before they just kind of just lost everything. Mesh is not really a good technology to build a business on. It's antithetical to that. So just beware, if you're trying to set up a business on mesh, it ends up not working out.
I'm not sure if there was a question specific for Mining Goblin there.
Did they see that at the conference? Is that LoRa application of Bitcoin still alive in the dev world? It would not be in the normies world. So I'm wondering if the dev world is still kicking it.
Mining Goblin, if you're there, we can't hear you.
I know that at one point it had been worked out to also, I think the same group of devs were working on like an open source patch yourself into the Bitcoin satellite, where you could grab a bunch of parts from old, like DirecTV dishes and stuff, and rig yourself up basically a satellite based Bitcoin broadcasting system.
Now, I think that technology is cool. It's definitely way above my my wheelhouse, and so I get lost in a little bit of it. But seeing the guys work on this with Operation Gabriel and kind of playing around with a little bit of it, it's fascinating. So I definitely think there's something here. But I want to go ahead and start moving on. We have Wade up here on the panel, and I want to give him the stage to go over conference that he's throwing, Bitcoin Alaska in Juneau, July 5th and 6th. So Wade, I'd love you to come up here and talk about it and get everybody as pumped up as I am.
So the conference, the satellite events we're predicting are going to start July 2nd. We've got a lot of concepts out there. Not sure exactly what's going to happen for those satellite events, but possibly a dinner at a brewery, a Bitcoin bets run up to, say, Nugget Falls. It's about a 0.8 run. We could do a polar plunge at the end of that up by the glacier. We may have a range day. Then going into July 3rd, we'll have the reception cruise. That cruise is an 8-hour cruise going south of town. It goes up into Tracy Arm Fjord. This cruise will be encompassed in the Whale Pass. Basically, we'll have a lot of the speakers who are going to be at the conference, as well as guests who would like to just call it the backstage event, be on the cruise for 8 hours. It'll be the only Whale Pass where you could very well actually see whales. It's common to see humpback whales, orca, brown bear, goats, seals, you know, all the wildlife of Alaska, as well as watch the hydro just dripping off the mountainsides. Once we arrive back in Juneau on the 3rd, we're trying to work out with a property owner downtown so that we could all watch the fireworks in one location right there beachside. We've got high mountains, so when the fireworks go off, they echo off the walls really nicely. Waking up on the 4th, there's the parade downtown. I'm not sure exactly what we're going to do for that. Possibly floats in the parade, maybe do a Bitcoin vets cleanup, pick it uptown a little bit after that. But it's a huge event. The 4th of July is a big thing here in Juneau, and it's a time of year where everybody comes back to town. So all the policymakers that may be out of town up in Anchorage for other things, for work and life, I'll return to Juneau. So it's a really high impact time frame for having a conference here. There's stages down at Sandy Beach. I'm thinking about getting a hold of one of those stages, maybe for some kind of a talking session. Then on July 5th and 6th is the actual conference. So it's not just going to be the conference, but there's going to be a lot more involved in this activity. And it's going to be focused on more Alaska type activities, not the normal that you might see elsewhere. So if anyone has any questions, the website is bitcoinalaska.org. The tickets are on sale out there. So anyone who's interested in going, the caveat to this is make sure you get your lodging first. Hotels are already filling up for next year. We don't have a ton of them. This is not a huge city. This is not Nashville. So get your tickets get your lodging saddle squared up before you purchase your tickets on our website.
Yeah, I can't tell you, Wade, how excited I am for this conference. I love going to Alaska in the summertime. I've never been to Juneau. I've always stayed up near Anchorage area. But this, I really can't wait. And it's family friendly. I'm not sure if you hit on that point, but there's going to be a lot of satellite events. There's tons of things to do for children of all ages. Bring your mother, bring your mother-in-law. I'm bringing my entire family, and it's going to be an absolute blast. So I really cannot wait. And we'll try and start posting some more links to get everybody going. But like Wade said, the website's up. Lodging is going to be a big issue. So again, go ahead and start booking it now. You can go and always get refundable lodging at some of these sites. So book it now so you're not scrambling last minute. Does anybody have any questions for Wade? Or go ahead, Wade, sorry.
Another thing I'd like to throw out there is the policymakers here in Juneau, you look at, it's a town of 30,000 people. So it's not a really big city, but this is where the governor's mansion is. This is where the Alaska State Legislature holds session. This is where a lot of the headquarters for the Alaska Native Corps is. You know, Alaska have, we have the Alaska Retirement Board as well. The Permanent Fund Corp, which they control the investments on the, basically our sovereign wealth fund, which is, they take revenues for the state of Alaska that comes in from resources. They take a percentage of the revenues generated by oil, but it's not just oil. People think it's just oil, but it's also mining and other monies that come in from resources. They take a percentage of that. They invested in the Permanent Fund Corp. Permanent Fund Corp buys stocks and other assets. The revenues generated is what pays out the Permanent Fund. So a lot of people believe that the Permanent Fund is a social system, but it's not. It's actually a TradFi system. It's not free money coming from, say, money printer. It's money generated through investments that's paid out to this residents, the citizens of Alaska. So that's also here. I'd really like to have some kind of impact with not only the legislature, but the Permanent Fund Corp, the Alaska Retirement Board. We have a lot of unions that are based here in Juneau. So for 30,000 people, this is an insanely high impact. I don't think you could have a higher impact location for a conference anywhere in the country for the per capita for the amount of people we have.
Yeah, and we should make a strong force and a strong show there with all of us getting us together. You know, we can't stop talking about Bitcoin, so we're going to orange pill the entire city of Juneau with this conference. That's my expectation. And I'm going to make the stance right now. I'm not going to leave Juneau until we orange pill everybody. This way I don't have to come back home to the heat in the south. I see we have Mining Goblin back up. Did you want to go ahead and continue on, sir?
Yeah, I guess I didn't know where I left off.
Heard nothing after the question.
After the question, remind me of the question again. I'm so sorry.
It was the mess. Petra, you're going to have to ask it again.
Oh, the Meshtastic. Yeah. I'm not super familiar with that project, but I know there are a lot of like Meshtastic communities popping up, right? So like one of the ones that we sort of got tied in was like North Carolina Mesh. They had a whole Discord that was stood up, and it was all around mesh radio stuff. So I'm not familiar with the specific one that you had mentioned, but I do know, you know, there are initiatives now. Like one of the guys at TAB was talking about how he wanted to connect Atlanta to Nashville using Meshtastic. And I think it's doable, especially given what Shane, Mike, and Jordan did up on, you know, on Big Ball Mountain, putting that repeater up. Like if we get more of those up and about, it's going to be pretty wild. And I think we can connect a vast swath of the United States using this technology. And I'm sure it will break along the way, right? Just like everything else. Cause when you go to try to scale something, it breaks.
Wait, I see you have your hand up, sir.
So that was my question actually. How well does Meshtastic scale?
That's a great question. And if I had any friends local to me, I could probably let you know. But with any kind of network, and especially with like radio and stuff, there's going to be scaling issues. I just don't know what that limit is. You could probably go research it, or the Meshtastic Discord. Somebody probably has a page long explanation for you.
Sorry about that. My mouse got stuck. Was there anything else, Mining Goblin, that you wanted to hit on or touch on?
No, just send more devs. Like if you there. Okay. This is one thing. This is a call to action. Aside from just go and get your like, you know, radio license and Meshtastic and everything like that. If you have friends that are,
you don't need a license though for Meshtastic.
You do not need a license. You do not need a license for Meshtastic. Absolutely not. Correct. If you have a friend that's a software developer or an engineer of any kind, maybe they're Bitcoiner, maybe they're not. Or if you yourself are a Bitcoiner or a software engineer, consider looking into applying for a grant within the open source community, right? Especially if you're already contributing to open source, there's money out there for Freedom Tech. So if you know anybody, make the ask. If they need to be connected with me, get them connected with Coleman. Coleman can get a hold of me. And yeah, we can work on getting some funding for open source projects. And it doesn't have to necessarily be only Bitcoin. It can be Bitcoin adjacent. It can be any sort of like liberating freedom tech that is open source. And there's funding and there's money out there for that kind of stuff. So that's it. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thank you for coming up here. It's always a pleasure talking with you. And we need to have you come back on so we just have a show dedicated to this stuff. There's a lot of it does go over my head, and I do have more questions I'd like to dive into.
Yeah, I mean, I got time if you got more questions. Otherwise, I'll be lurking on Nostr, shitposting my way into a revolution.
Well, that would be one of the things I want to hit on would be Nostr and just try and get more people familiar with it. I have an account myself, but being completely honest, I don't get on there too much because it's not as user-friendly as X is for me.
Yeah, I'll pause. I see Wade has his hand up, so I'll pause to see what GigaBrain thing he has to ask.
I think his hand is just stuck up.
Okay. So Nostr, you know, there's all this talk about like digital identity, right? And things like that and digital IDs and everything. On Nostr, your ID is just a public-private key pair, right? So the same way you hold your Bitcoin with your own keys, right? You have a private key, you have a public key. You have a private key and a public key on Nostr. And everything you put out on Nostr is signed by your private key, right? So digital signatures cannot be faked by AI, right? Proof of work cannot be faked by AI. Those are like two things that I'm pretty confident in saying that the AI cannot fake right now, right? You know, once we get to that point, we have the compute to sort of fake those things. We have other problems to tackle. But a digital signature from a private key cannot be faked. And so Nostr uses that as sort of a way to authenticate that when you see a note or some other event published by me on Nostr, in so much as you know me to keep my private key secure, you know that I signed that note. Like there's a non-repudiation there, right? Like I did that thing. I put it out there. Which also begins to build these like webs of trust, right? Which is not a new concept. If anybody's familiar with PGP, was sort of like an original way of like signing code and signing messages and doing email encryption and stuff. Very, very cypherpunk stuff. But now it's been the tooling for PGP, many theorized, was like sabotaged by state actors to make it less robust and less usable by the laypersons. But Nostr today, you can go, if you're on an iPhone, you can download the Damus client, D-A-M-U-S, and get started today with a random key. And the beautiful thing is you can just create a new random key, you know, every day if you wanted to. There's nothing stopping you, right? So it's sort of, you own that data when you publish it. Nobody else can, you know, people can share that data, but you're the one that has signed it. You also own your followers, right? Like this is huge, especially with these siloed platforms like X and Facebook and Twitter and everything like that. Is those are siloed platforms. You don't own any of that content. You don't own any of that data. When the powers that be are hostile against you and they ban you for whatever reason, all that's gone, right? You have to go rebuild that somewhere else. Or as a business, right? Like if you have a diehard follower, you know, based on like Instagram, and suddenly you make the wrong, you know, posting or whatever, and you get rug pulled, it's hard to rebuild that, right? But on Nostr, because you're just following me at my pub key, so like I put everything out there and it's my pub key is associated with all of this. And so you can go to these Nostr relays, and I mean, you don't go to it, your app does for you. And you say, hey, I'm following, you know, Mining Goblin pub key. And so, you know, give me all of the data from him.
Can you explain why this is becoming more important, and over the next, I would say probably less than 4 years, it's going to be extremely important to be able to sign for your own digital data, and how people are able to use AI to get you to say things that aren't true. So why is Nostr going to be so important with that? You still with us, Mining Goblin? Going once, twice. Okay, I think we're having some technical issues with Mining Goblin again. We'll see if he joins us back. But I want to give a quick thank you to our partners we have on the spaces. Give a quick shout out to Punchplate. I see in the audience. Let's get a fist pump for Punchplate. Stamp your seed phrase on a metal plate. Check them out at punchplate.com. blacksheepammo.com. Restock your ammo supplies with Black Sheep Ammo at blacksheepammo.com. Solo Satoshi open source Bitcoin mining at solosatoshi.com. And Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms and tactical training at paladintowertactics.com. So we can go ahead and start moving on to the Joe Rogan and Trump interview. For those who don't know, Trump went on the Joe Rogan podcast on Friday, and over the last 3 days, it has had more than 33 million views on YouTube. The Spotify views haven't been verified, released yet, but it's estimated to be several million as well. So it's one of the largest viewed YouTube videos Joe Rogan has put out. And so I have to admit, I didn't watch the video yet. I'm going to be able to watch it later today. But I'd like to get everyone's thoughts if you saw it and just kind of get your views. I think one of the biggest things I saw, and we do have a clip for it, was the Trump, again, Rogan hit him on the income tax statement he had said at that barbershop. And he got him to kind of commit to removing the federal income tax and replacing it with a tariff. So we do have, hey, Mining Goblin, you got your mic on. You're hot right now.
Okay, yep.
So before we jump over to Mining Goblin, I want to just go ahead and play this clip. And so, Jacob, just give me a thumbs up when you're ready to load it. It's going to be Rogan holding Trump's feet to the fire with the income tax.
It'll Did keep you just companies. Float out the idea of getting rid of income taxes and replacing it with tariffs?
Well, okay.
Were you serious about that?
Yeah, sure. But why not? Because we – ready? Our country was the richest in the – relatively – in the 1880s and 1890s. A president who was assassinated named McKinley, he was the tariff king. He spoke beautifully of tariffs. His language was really beautiful. We will not allow – the enemy to come in and take our jobs and take our factories and take our workers and take our families unless they pay a big price. And the big price is tariffs. And he'd speak like that, but he was right. And then around in the early 1900s, they switched over stupidly to, frankly, an income tax. And you know why? Because countries were putting a lot of pressure on America. We don't want to pay tariffs. Please don't. You know, they believe me, they control our politicians. If you look at the kind of numbers that these guys make then and now, but we had a commission meeting in the, I think it was 1887. Think of this problem. We were so rich. We had so much money. We didn't know what to do. So they set up a blue ribbon commission on tariffs. And the sole purpose is what to do with all the money we had. We were so rich. Because we were taxing other people for coming in and taking our jobs.
So I do think that this is really big news, and I want to get everybody's thoughts on this. Again, I don't know how much he would be able to accomplish with trying to remove this. I am sure that there will be tons of hurdles and tons of loopholes he'd have to go through. But I think this has some very serious consequences for everything. So Eomar, I'd like to get your thoughts on this, if you don't mind, sir.
I mean, first off, if I'm being honest, I'm surprised he knew that much. You know, like a lot of times, at least my impression is like he hears a lot of sound bites, or he thinks something will sound good, so he tosses out a sound bite. So it was good to hear him like actually be able to you know, cite some reasons for his beliefs.
Yes. And that's why I think that there's some traction to this, because normally it, you're right. It's just surface. He just kind of scratches it and just kind of leaves you wondering. But again, he went over it. And then also you had, Cantor Fitzgerald's, Howard Lutwick talk about it yesterday at his rally. And so yeah. I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead, sir.
No, I mean, that's basically it. Like that, you know, that was like the main thing that stood out to me, like that it wasn't just like a thing that he tossed out there with nothing behind, like he's done, or somebody near him has done some research. You know, personally, I think that's a much better system to have than, you know, the 40% slave tax that we have right now. Anything I think consumption based is preferable to an income tax. So, you know, the, basing it off of tariffs, you know, there's a lot of benefits in my mind. You know, like, I'm not a import export. As you know, it's outside of my wheelhouse generally, but you know, at a high level, it makes sense that we'll have, like, yes, the costs of things will go up for, like, the individual, right? So, like, if you put it, I mean, Bitcoin miners are a good example, right? There's like a 25% tariff on Bitcoin miners coming from China. So, you know, the end user, we don't have an option for that, an alternative option for that. So we just get stuck with that 25%. Like, we pay that, right? Like, Antminer, no, they don't really have to lower their prices to accommodate that. If they reach to, if it got to like the point where there was a, you know, that supply and demand curve got imbalanced, then yeah, they would have to lower it, lower their price to try to beat the tariffs or whatever, you know, kind of share some of the pain there. You know, it'll be the same thing across anything else that we put a tariff on. But then the alternative is, you know, at least in theory, we'll get some of those things being produced here in the United States. Trump likes to talk a lot about cars. He talked about like that Mexico plant that got shut down because he was talking about the tariffs that he was going to enact on it. You know, I'm not against it. People like to think that, you know, that free trade is the only way to go. But like, at what cost, right? Like, if we have to have all this money for government, like, what would I rather sacrifice? You know, 40% of my income in perpetuity, or and like my kids and their kids, and like just getting worse and worse and worse and worse. Or like tariffs on foreign goods coming into the United States. I definitely choose tariffs. And I think the follow on effects you kind of mentioned, like the hurdles and stuff that they'd have. But I think that will necessitate just like a more constitutionally confined government. You know, the Federal Reserve and the income tax were the 1-2 punch of the Leviathan we have today. So anything that takes a step in destroying that, I'm all for.
You mentioned hurdles. I don't think there's a hurdle, right? Like, doesn't the IRS fall under the executive branch as a function of the Treasury? This is like a thesis that I've had, is if you run for your local sheriff, you're the enforcement arm of whatever laws there are. And if there are laws that are unconstitutional or unjust, you just don't enforce them. So if dude gets in and he doesn't want an income tax, he can just go, hey, IRS, you are no longer collecting the income tax. And then that's that, right? Like, that's directly under the executive branch, unless I'm completely retarded about understanding the U.S. government, which I might be.
I think you're right in terms of like, what could he actually do? I'm pretty sure he could just say, like, you don't, like, that's not your purview anymore, and technically they have to follow the orders. I think the hurdles will be, you know, they'll tell him, if you do this, like, chaos will ensue and the world will end and everything will collapse. And, you know, so I think there'll be like some sort of, I don't see him just going in and like saying, shut it down. You know, like, I don't see him like, I could see like if Ron Paul got in there, just like taking a hammer to things, but Donald Trump less so, you know?
I don't know. I don't know if he'll take a soft approach with it. I think he might go in and just do it quick and just get it over with. And again, I think they'll paint the picture that it's going to be chaotic and messy and the worst thing ever. But I think very quickly, I think over several months, people start to realize the benefits of it. And yeah, goods will go up. That's just going to be an effect of it. If you increase tariffs, prices are going to go up, but the prices will be less than what you're paying in your taxes. And so.
Absolutely. And what I really, really want to see from Trump is who is in his administration. You know what I mean? Like, I know, like, he talked about some of the mistakes he made in that interview, in terms of appointments and stuff. So like, I really wish he would give us more details. Like, I would love to know where Vivek is going to be. I think we've talked about this last week or something too, but I'd like to know where he's going to be. You know, I know Elon Musk, I think, tweeted something about saving a couple of $1 trillion or said something about that, by cutting the government. You know, this all becomes much easier if we start cutting our federal government. I'd like to say, I don't know how any Americans could be against cutting the federal government, but we see like a good 50% of them at least that think the government should have more power. So,
you have a lot of Americans working for the federal government, right?
Yeah.
It's a broken incentive system there. Like, if your job and your family's food depends on it, you're going to be pro federal government.
Yeah. And it's funny. I went to a Prohibition museum. I think it might have been in Nashville. No, maybe it was Georgia. I forget where. Somewhere down south. But there was like a Prohibition museum, and they made the point that like a lot of like the anti-drug movement kind of started as a way to like, how do we keep, now that Prohibition's over, like how do we the feds get to keep their jobs so that we don't lose a bunch of voters and get a bunch of pushback? And that was kind of like the transition into that. So you're absolutely right. Like the federal voter block is definitely a huge block there. But hopefully they can be convinced that like they, your job's safe. It's just, you know, the other guy's job, you know? So we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah. I'd like to know who's putting this bug in his ear. Who's talking to him? Because again, he knows too much for him just to be throwing it out there. I've heard now, this would be the third time I've heard Howard Lutnick of Cantor Fitzgerald speak about the tariffs and Trump's policy. So I wonder if there's a spot for him and his cabinet, and if he's going to be spearheading this to kind of get things going. Anyone have any thoughts on that? No pushback, so I must be right. We're going to find out here pretty quick. The election is, what, 7-8 days? And so... It's going to be interesting. They're trying to throw everything at the wall to make Trump and his campaign look awful. But when you start seeing the amount of people showing up for these rallies and the numbers that they're garnering, it looks like it's pretty one-sided. And so I hope that there's no shenanigans. I know that there's going to be, but I hope there's not going to be any shenanigans going on and that it is peaceful and that the transition is smooth. But I don't think that's going to be the case. And so, Omar, if you, or Petro, if you guys want to add anything to that, please feel free.
I mean, if he leans into this and just like says like, yeah, we're getting rid of the income tax, I would imagine that would be a landslide. Like even all the problems I have with Donald Trump, if he said 100%, I'm getting rid of the income tax, like I can wait for the follow on effects. The follow on effects of that will fix a lot of the problems I have. So, I'd like to see him like really lean into that and make that like his campaign promise.
To abolish the income tax is a campaign promise?
Yeah. Yeah. Like really, like I feel like he would kind of say like, oh, well, I was, you know, he at least now has deniability. Like, oh, we were just kind of talking. He asked me about it. I wasn't really, you know, blah, blah, blah. We looked into it. I want it to be like a promise. Like, this is what I'm doing. We don't need this. We can do tariffs. Let's help America, you know. If he went with that line, I'll stop complaining about him for the next 9 days, and then I'll start complaining after he's elected. So,
yeah, you're right. We're holding his feet to the fire, but he hasn't come out and 100% said he was going to do it. But just the amount of chatter we're getting, maybe it's just really good strategy for his campaign because we're talking about it and everybody's talking about it.
Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but I think it's important to, like, one thing that really struck me when he was at the Bitcoin conference was how he, like, took in people's response and, like, made it part of his idea. You know, like, so he talked about, like, firing Gary Gensler, and people, like, were cheering, and he, like, you could see him, like, processing. He's like, oh, these guys hate him. Like, this is a good thing for me to stick on. So hopefully he sees, like, the positivity around, like, eliminating the income tax, and hopefully that feedback gets up to him and he kind of internalizes it and makes it a thing. You know, I think that's like kind of how his brain works there. So I don't know if he mentioned it during I know he had a big thing in Madison Square Garden yesterday. I haven't watched that yet. So I don't know if he mentioned it again there, but if a bunch of people cheered for it, I think that it's a better chance of it sticking.
I had that on the, oop, go pick on Carney.
Yeah. It was just one thing I noticed. He said last night, I think his strategy might be to kind of chip away at taxes in general. He started with a no tax on tips. And then I heard last week he floated something about like basically cops, firemen, service members, no income tax for them. And then at the thing last night, he said, and it was seemed so random, like no tax on family members who take care of like parents or other family members. So it's like he's trying to almost subvert it and do a little sly roundabout way of his own. But in terms of the overall, like who has the power, I thought it was the 16th Amendment that passed the income tax, and it's like a congressional thing, but I don't know if anybody knows more about that.
No, that's definitely above my pay grade and wheelhouse. I know nothing about that. Yeah, so to echo Bitcoin Carney, I did watch the rally last night. I had it in the background, and I was listening to what he said, and he brought it up again. Not going to beat a dead horse with this, but I'm very hopeful that it goes through. I think something else we have to hit on is kind of going to be a comical thing to end the show on was. Hey, BitPetro, you got a hot mic, sir. Thank you. I think the timeline that we are just living, whether this is we're living in some kind of matrix or whatever is going on, it's kind of comical. During a speech Janet Yellen was giving, she was standing at the podium and they had the U.S. Treasury seal on the podium. And as she was getting questioned about how people viewed the Treasury, she was giving her remark and the Treasury sign literally just fell off the podium. It falls to the ground and it stops everybody. And she gets around and looks at it. I believe in signs. This was literally a sign falling. And so maybe that's kind of a little bit more to say what's going to happen with the U.S. status, with everything going on with BRICS. It's going to be crazy. And something else I saw this weekend, but I didn't even put on my notes, was that Russia is trying to organize a new way to value gold. I'm going to find it really quick. But Eomer, did you see that at all posted this weekend?
No, I've been kind of unplugged most of the weekend, so I haven't been keeping up with too much.
Yeah, give me a second. I'm going to find it because I retweeted it. It was big news. Here we go. Ben Rickert. Russia is in talks with other BRICS members about creating an international precious metal exchange to ensure fair pricing and trade growth. The country's finance minister, can't say his name, said in a statement on Thursday. So Ben Rickert says, translation, no Western price manipulation. And again, I think that's a huge deal. I listened to a Luke Grohman podcast just over the weekend, and he was talking about this exact thing, about how he thinks that they're going to do a repricing of gold to help offset our debt balances and try and get things back on track. So it's crazy that these two things came out at the same time.
Yeah, I feel like I remember something. I don't think it was gold, but I know there's talk about like how like the paper gold markets and stuff can be used to manipulate the price and stuff like that. So I assume it's something related to that, and like how, I don't know exactly the mechanism, but I've heard other like different people speak on it. And I think there was an issue like within the past couple of years. I don't know if it was, maybe it was nickel or something on like the London exchange. There was an issue with, or some shenanigans going on with, but I imagine it's just to kind of take away that power lever that they have, through like the paper exchanges and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think it was the nickel, right? Where someone was going to lose just a ton of money and they went back and just kind of erased the entire trading day. Is that what you were talking about, Eomer?
Yeah, something like that. I don't remember the exact details, but I remember it was like a lot of shenanigans. And then like that's where there's like a huge surge of people talking about like the pricing shenanigans that can happen and stuff through those exchanges. So it makes sense that like if you are looking to move away from the dollar, that you want to also, you want, you know, the price of hard assets to be real and not, you know, not created or fudged a little bit, you know, or a lot of it, depending on who you talk to.
Yeah, absolutely. Fair pricing, no manipulation. That's why we Bitcoin. Again, there's nobody in control. It's decentralized. So we're getting to the top of the hour. We're going to go ahead, and if anyone has anything that they'd like to mention or hit on or just say hello, you're more than welcome just to come up real quick or let me know what you want to speak about. I guess that's nobody. So again, I want to thank everybody who tuned in today. I really appreciate it. We do this every weekday, Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern time. We're doing it again tomorrow. I really appreciate everybody who joined the panel. Goblin Mining, EMR, BitPetro, Bitcoin Carney, Jacob for doing everything in the background. It really means a lot to me and everybody in the audience. Again, there's so many of you, I can't name you all, but it really does mean a lot. It makes my job easier. It makes it more enjoyable knowing that I'm not just talking to myself, because I can do that anytime. Tune in tomorrow night for our Bitcoin Veterans video podcast at 7 p.m. Eastern. We're going to give an update with Operation Gabriel. We're going to have the guys that were out there talking about it. And so it's going to be a great episode. Stay tuned for that. We'll have some links posted on our Twitter handle. And that's it. Get out there and spread the mission, or spread the message. Get on the mission. But again, we need to show the world what we can do as a community, as Bitcoiners, and show them that there is a way out of this corruption, this manipulation, getting off the hamster wheel and doing your own thing. So go out there and orange pill your friends and your community. That's how we make big changes. So that's it. I will see you tomorrow morning, and do not shitcoin. It's like buying a lottery ticket with yesterday's numbers.